Hello and welcome to In the Money Media's continuing coverage of the spring meet. This is our show for the racing of Wednesday, April 24th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again, dreaming of Lexington, but up here in New York. Not such a bad time to be in New York either, to be fair. But we'll focus today on what's going on down in central Kentucky. And to do that, we'll bring in a man who's been doing a great job with his Keeneland notebooks on the In the Money Plus side, as well as coordinating all kinds of content for us. He is a real unsung hero and very sharp horse player we have the pleasure of working with here at In the Money Media. He's Eric DeCoster. Eric, how are things?
Things are good. Things are good. That was very, things are even better after that introduction. Thank you.
It's all from the heart. And, you know, we've been having some success. It's obviously it's a bit feast or famine with these shows, especially when we're talking about, you know, one spot. But, you know, I've seen you've had plenty of success in the stuff you've been writing up for us over on the website, and was curious because, you know, it doesn't always happen. You can have a lot of winners in writing and then not connect things in the wagering. How have you been doing from a betting point of view this meet?
Thankfully, a lot better than the journal at times. I've been overall pleased with what I've been putting out. But you're right. Every now and then you'll be, you know, as people may not know, I do three kind of main plays a day: a maiden, a pace oriented play, and then my overall best bet. And there's probably been four or five times this meet I've been between two races on one. I stuck with the other, and then the other comes in sometimes at a bigger price. I'm like, oh. That would have been a little nice, but at least the money might be in my pocket.
The analysis has been great consistently, and that's, you know, what obviously we want winners, but that's yes. Really what people turn up for, as I always say. So the quality of the work has been high in there. You're selling yourself a little short. There have been plenty of winners in there too, but I'm glad to hear that it has converted to some success in the cash betting. We do not have an altar of pick three on this final Wednesday card of the Keeneland meet. So what we sometimes do in that instance is choose to focus on a double. Actually, did I lie? There is an alter of pick three on this Wednesday card, but we're not talking about that. We're going to focus on the double in this one because it does also have that very exciting new player-friendly takeout, with the takeout having been reduced from 22% to 15%. It's had good financial returns for Keeneland and obviously been terrific putting more money in horse player pockets as well. So let's each pick one. We'll let you go first. What race do you want to turn to?
I want to start in race six. We were talking beforehand. I don't feel super confident about true win contenders in this race, but between this sixth race and the seventh race after this, there are horses I feel like I can use a few and hopefully get away with, especially because I don't like the favorites. Starting in race six, where at least the two Viva La Red's the morning line favorite, I just don't love a horse who's won for 22 lifetime. I know that this is her condition. I know that she's been in a lot tougher. I know that she's found new life going long on the grass, but she's just not for me. So if I can take some high upside types, especially the five, I'm a sure thing. That's who I like. She ran a slow figure last time out, breaking her maiden, but it was on the Tapeta down at Gulfstream. She had some really good efforts against some really nice turf forces, going way shorter than she wants in every start leading up to that. And so this is the right spot. She'll be able to sit a forward trip, which probably benefits her. For Christophe Clement, Tyler Gaffleone, always capable in these mile and a half turf races that we're going to be running in here. So that's the one I'm really keying in on in this sixth race to try and, especially once again, trying to beat that number two.
I get it. You know, this wasn't one of the races I was going to give out a horse in, but I'm probably a little bit more forgiving than you are of Viva La Red, all in all, simply based on the company. You know, looking at something like the good indicator of class can be the Timeform U.S. race ratings. And these three most recent unsuccessful runs, you know, it's all graded company. All those races are rated 115 or higher, as opposed to today's 105 allowance race. And I just feel like against this group, she would be my top pick. But I'm very intrigued by your case on I'm a Sure Thing. Leaves me in a bit of a no man's land in terms of the double, with not loving taking a double where you've got the first two shots. So I don't know. I may leave this one alone in terms of the double. But if you are playing that all turf pick three, which starts in race number four, I think that bet with its $3 minimum, it lets you use the first and second choices without getting completely upside down. So for that bet, I'll probably go with those two. And then the back half of your double race, number seven, is the first race that I had wanted to talk about. So we'll see if we're singing from the same hymn book or have different ideas as we move forward to this dirt allowance race for fillies and mares going six furlongs. I'll let you go first.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to see where we stand on this. I do not like Howl, number three for Brad Cox in this spot, which gives me an opportunity to hopefully get some value from the three others I do like, which are number one, Unsung Melody, who's got a lot of speed, and I think that, you know, she's obviously very good over three quarters. Number two, Exceed, or number one, Unsung Melody, number two, Exceed, comes off a win here at Keeneland with great form, and I never care about Chad Brown off the layoff. Right. And number seven, Irvadian, second back off the bench, off a good run, that speedy traveler who beat her is a mighty fine filly. And this is a horse who's been very consistent for a Dallas Stewart barn that very good, but we do know sometimes struggles in the consistency category. So I'm intrigued to see how she handles this as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, one of us is very likely to win because I was going to chalk out with Howl in this spot. And I almost just feel wedded to her as she's one that I didn't ultimately end up picking in the La Brea, but I made I wrote a lot about her and dug into her pretty deeply, and just feels like one of these that's brought back in this spot, you know, I think going to be ready enough based on the looks of this work tab. And I felt like with the La Brea run, sort of built-in excuse in terms of class, built-in excuse in terms of when it precedes a layoff like that, that gives me enough reason to say, okay, well, obviously something went wrong. And what I'm guessing the something went wrong might be, could be bleeding in there. It gave the visual impression of a horse that just had an issue and emptied out, coming back today, getting back on the Lasix, and getting, I think, what's going to be an absolutely perfect tracking trip, the likes of which she had in those two wins. I can't include all of yours, so I'll probably bet a little bit less than I was going to out of fear that your read might be right. Is it just the price she's going to be and the fact that she's hard to trust coming out of that grade one race that makes you not like her? Are you somebody who, you know, maybe quite sensibly doesn't love to see a graded stakes caliber horse coming back at the allowance ranks? What is your case against Howl?
Yeah, I mean, the price is the price, and I think that's just an added bonus. But really, I didn't love, even heading into the La Brea, that it seemed like she took a step back despite finding tougher company. I just felt like she could have done a little more in there based off all the word around her from the maiden win. So I already didn't love her there, and then she ran poorly. I do understand the bleeding notion. I did hear that from someone else, actually. And here's what I always get a little fearful then first back is, well, what if that was a bad experience for them? One great example is my fellow Iowa-bred Tyler's Tribe. He bled in the Breeders' Cup, and he was never the same horse because he just didn't want to do his job anymore. And I think that's fair. So that's also a case where I can be a little skeptical if that were the case.
Not unreasonable. We'll see. If one of us doesn't get race seven, I'll be very surprised. Let's put it that way. Yes. And I thought race eight, the back end for me, this maiden turf race, I thought Saint Daniel, I'm going to say, I don't know if they say Neots, I'm not sure, to be honest with you. But this horse, second off a gelding at operation after attending the pace in that comeback race, now back second off the layoff, I thought was just going to sit in the perfect place and maybe the favorite, or I guess could be the second choice, a morning line. Nick has John the Beer Man being bet over the nine runner in this spot. But I felt like he had every license to be very, very tough. You could, and this is one of the ones where I think some people might knee jerk, well, he's had his chances 0 for 7. But second off the layoff, off the gelding operation, a better than looked, I thought, come back to the races. This was a horse I was willing to trust in sort of a chalk double. And we're going to be talking a lot more about Matt Miller's new book. It's not available for sale yet, so I've been holding off on talking about it too much. But one of the very interesting avenues of exploration he has in the book is the ability to find value in chalky doubles, essentially. And I feel like this is one we'll have a chance to have the price discovery and be able to see what's going on. But I think there's a chance this could pay a little bit more than it should. So I'm going to look for that cold double in race 7 and race 8. Just for the notes that we send around for the plus side, would you like to include any of your thoughts on race number 8? Do you think I might be on to something with the 9, or might I be out to lunch here?
I definitely think you're on to something. This is a horse, actually, when he was a 2-year-old, I was convinced was going to make his way up the ranks. And he's still a maiden, but I think he's only a maiden because he's been in many unfortunate spots, whether it was pace, whether it was tough trip, whether it was closing too late. But he absolutely still has the talent. So I'm encouraged by you liking him. I think John the Beer Man's obviously, even though it's nothing exciting, when you see a horse finish up like he did last time out, you have to take note. Tyler Gaffleone now hops aboard. It just seems like he was beating up on himself a bunch in that first start. So it's an ideal spot, but I think you have the right horse to beat him.
And what I might do also in the double is then have an opportunity to come back here, and depending on what the prices look like, bet enough John the Beer Man to get my stake back on the double, or play a straight 10-9 with the idea that if the 9 doesn't run second, it just, you know, wasn't my day or whatever. And, you know, maybe do a smart way of hedging in that regard, if that's the one I want. Were there any others that caught your eye, or were you all about the top of the market in race number 8, as I was?
The only other one I thought might be interesting was the 5 Rebel Red, first time U.S. He was favored on debut and almost won, and then he caught a pretty tough next start at Newmarket. He didn't run well, but he was well bet, and he lost to good horses. He hasn't run in quite a while, but that kind of class and that kind of pedigree, those kinds of connections can't be discredited.
That would probably be the other one to have a look at. All right, we're going to have you do double duty because no good deed goes unpunished. Stick around. We'll do another show for Thursday, but we'll leave this one here and get it out in the world sooner rather than later. Eric, appreciate your help and all the work you've done for us behind the scenes, this Keeneland meet, and really for ever since you joined the company.
Yeah, absolutely. Always enjoy it.
Good stuff from you. A reminder that there is the Horses of Racing Age sale at Keeneland on Friday. We're going to have a special guest to talk about that a little bit later in the week as well. I also recommend people go back and check out the piece we did with Cormac on the Friday show last week. Cormac Branick, and he talked a little bit about the Keeneland renovation, a little bit about the sale, some good info in that that's evergreen beyond the racing stuff we talked about. So you can find that in your In the Money podcast feed. Hopefully you're subscribing to us wherever you get your podcast. Most of you come from iTunes, but there's other places as well. We don't judge. We're just happy you're listening. Good stuff, Eric. Appreciate you. Thanks one more time. Thanks to our friends at Keeneland. We'll be back tomorrow. Till then, I'm Peter Thomas Fornatel. May you win all your photos.